government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth. And when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour on this December. I was thinking of something else a moment ago. January. Let's start over. So nice to have you with us on this January the 8th on the West Coast, January the 9th, 2010 on the East Coast, and in the Central Time Zone. We're not only happy you tuned in to BBSRadio.com, but we've got folks listening on Wind Talkers Radio Network and BlogTalkRadio.com, and we welcome you folks as well. Lots going on. Been getting some very interesting email from some people I don't know. Received a nice, very nice one from a man named Benjamin out there. And Ben, if you're listening, I'll be responding, time permitting, we're hearing that there are people out there that are just discovering that there is some alternative media on the internet where people are bringing the truth forward, and they're hearing things that they're not hearing anywhere else. Certainly they're not hearing it on the mainstream, and that's to be expected. We've been telling you all along that the mainstream media for the past 60 to 70 years, and if you include newspapers, you could easily go back 100 years, the mainstream media has been bought up by a small clique of billionaires who, and some are trillionaires now, who have just choked the stream of truth and kept you from knowing what's really going on. And an interesting conversation with someone earlier today who was telling me that they heard a member of the Illuminati on a radio show talking about what their role is in life, in the creation, and certainly here on planet Earth. They're not really honoring God per se as those of us that operate in the light. Their job, and this individual referred to what he's doing as his job, or the Illuminati's job, is to create chaos, to destroy, and to create their own reality and make us be subservient to that reality. So I would agree that that's what they do, but certainly I don't accept that as my reality, and many people I know, those that are listening to this show and others like this show, where they feel they're hearing the truth and they're waking up to their own self, their own inner power, their higher powers, their gifts. And we're talking about the gifts that they can share with others. We're finding out that these people are resonating with the message, which is the absolute dichotomy of what is being presented for them. So this individual says, your job as non-members of the Illuminati is to figure out what's going on and do something about it. I mean, if that's not an invitation to change this paradigm that we have, which is as close to absolute slavery as you can imagine, absolute anarchy as you can imagine, or autocratic, and the autocratic society probably run by less than 0.1% of the world's whole population and the infrastructure which it's produced under. Think about that. We outnumber them. This individual even said, you've got a lot more than us, and you could stop us. But your people are asleep. Your people are unconscious. They're not awake. And those of you that are successful in waking, some of them, once they find out how massive this whole plan has been and how well-constructed it is, they see it as fruitless or pointless to try to change that reality. Now, if that were the case, many of us who are doing what we do in researching history and revealing the lies that we've been told, and the lies of science and the lies of our true nature or who we are, we're either wasting our time or we're right on point, and we have to keep doing this. So those of you who wake up, those of you who respond to the message, your role then is to become responsible. The first part of the word respond, R-E-S-P, is found in many words that have to do with the individual. Response, responsibility, respect, and if you can't respect yourself, who can you respect? If you can't be responsible yourself and for what you do, for the decisions you make, and for your actions, then how can you expect others to be responsible with you? You're looking for a groundswell movement, a grassroots movement. You've got, it begins with responsibility. And more than that, it begins with an awareness, a consciousness. Not an unconsciousness, not a denial, not an unwillingness to even look at something. The word ignorance comes to mind. That word flashed through my mind. And usually when we say someone is ignorant, we take it as an offense. But you can be ignorant about many topics and not really being attacked. That's the point. You should understand the meaning of words. They're used a certain way to hurt us, like cattle or like sheep. And at the same time, using the word or understanding the word or considering the word might mean something else other than what you've been told it means, frees you. It liberates you to learn other possibilities. And certainly it's only a word. It only has the power that you ultimately give it. So if you just use it or accept it and don't question it and don't consider what how it relates to you, or you don't ask yourself the question why you're even here, probably none of this pertains to you. But if you've got questions and you looking for answers, hopefully tonight with our guest, you'll find some answers. Hopefully both of us will connect in spirit and in oneness of mind to give you the focus and the clarity that you need to understand that you yourself, you out there in the listening audience, have the power to change this whole reality. We could do it in a day if you understood how easy it is, but how important it is that you do your part, not as a bystander, not as an observer, not as someone in the audience wanting to be entertained, but as someone that is a contributor to the whole process. You've heard me say sometimes, I see some people, I encounter people who give me the impression that the lights are on, but nobody's home. They're there, but they're not there. They're there physically. They might be somewhat there mentally, but as a total package, they're oblivious to everything that's going on around them. Earlier today, I had someone cut in front of me. I was driving down a highway, and there were no cars in front of me and no cars behind me, as far as I could see in either direction. And this was a 90-degree intersection. And this person only had to wait for me to move about 10 car lengths, and I would have been past the street they were turning off of onto my street. But instead, they had to cut in front of me and risk an accident, risk killing themselves or risk killing me. And I thought, how unconscious that person is. That person has no business even driving a car, because they certainly weren't seeing what was right upon them. And I'm noticing that there's this impatience. This is all over the planet. People are starving for answers and starving for change and not realizing that you're not going to find it outside of yourself. It's inside yourself. And you have to be able to step out of the construct that's been created for you to keep you from realizing that. So before I say any more, let's bring on tonight's guest. He's been away for the past 2 weeks, and he's back with us. He's my regular Friday night guest and has been since the beginning of Evident Footprints. He's a scientist, inventor, author, lecturer, and teacher, and he's our resident science advisor, my good friend, Jim Murray. Jim, welcome back to the show.
Hey, thank you, Don. How are you this evening?
Oh, I'm wound up. Can't you tell?
Yeah, I can tell.
Well, Happy New Year to you, by the way.
Yeah, thank you. The same to you. It was interesting. I spent my New Year not under the best of conditions, but nonetheless in Japan, of all places.
Hmm.
So it's good to be back, though. I like Japan, but my communication capabilities are very limited because I don't speak the language.
Oh, yes. Now, there are places in Japan where they do speak English, but I think you're not going to find that in the same circles that you were traveling in.
Well, interestingly enough, the host that I went to see spoke fairly good English, enough to get through the communication barrier in a limited way. But it still leaves you with that unsatisfied feeling because you know that you can't have a really deep exchange like you can with someone who speaks your own language. But it was a very beautiful experience, and I'm glad I went.
Well, you know, the biggest concerns when you're in a foreign country are where am I going to eat, how am I going to eat, and how do I know what to order? Of course, if you like Oriental food, you probably know a lot of the words.
I was okay in that direction because I'd been with this gentleman before, and he knew what I liked, and he did the ordering, which was okay.
Oh, yeah. And it's even better if he pays, right?
Well, actually, we split it, but it was okay.
Well, that worked out, too. Well, Jim, you got to hear my opening here. Talking about, what I'm perceiving. I've been spending a lot of tedious time posting articles and stuff on my site, sort of revamping my site. And I've been forced by necessity to read the research that I've written. And I finished reading it early this morning. I was reading a series of articles. And I noticed the synchronicity of dates from character to character, noticing that these dates must have some mystical or magical or even satanic meaning behind them, that people are born on a certain date or they're all getting married on a certain date. These are proclamations. These are not even actual occurrences, you understand. This is in the false genealogies and the false histories set up for these various characters that become political leaders. And I started noticing all these synchronicities and everything, and when I was done reading everything, in a split second, this overwhelming feeling of none of this even matters, none of this means anything, came over me, and then I thought, okay, so I don't have to do this anymore. And the corrective thought came, or the disciplinary thought came back. Well, you're doing this for a reason, and you're going to be waking people up. You're bringing the knowledge to people, and it's going to take time. People are going to come to the information, and they're going to be able to figure all these things out. And that is happening. I have to admit that is happening. So I went back to doing it. That feeling wasn't there as an excuse to get away from doing the work. It was just that overwhelming realization that, you know, we're living in an illusion. And we can create, if we're going to be living in illusions, we might as well live in the ones that we create for ourselves rather than the ones others create for us. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, actually, that's a pretty interesting thing. I watched a very special scientific program on the plane that I was flying on, and they have the capability where they have quite a log of various films and reports and such that you can watch. And I chose one, which I think was originally a NOVA program, but anyway, it had to do with consciousness, interestingly enough.
Hmm.
And the interesting thing about it was that they had done a series of maps based on the neurons that are firing in a person's brain when they're engaged in various types of activities. And with the same input stimuli applied to each one of the people in these various test groups, what they found out was that the resulting distribution of activated neurons in each of the subjects' brains was entirely different. And that's pretty amazing in its own right. But what it suggests, of course, is that the same stimuli produce different types of conscious responses. So in answer to your question, it's almost as if each of us is in a slightly different world anyway. And, you know, what we experience as reality turns out to be a kind of combination between the way in which we're wired, the way in which we interact with our environment, our belief structure, and an infinite number of other variables which are probably impossible to track. And so, you know, it's no wonder when you stop and think about facts like this that we find it so difficult for people to have subjective experiences which coincide with one another. Maybe that's impossible.
In a sense, you know, what's coming through while you're describing this, and I hope I'm not interrupting you by making this comment. If I am, stop me and I'll shut up for the moment.
No, go ahead.
Okay. What came through while you were saying that is that that's the whole idea behind laws, and that's the whole idea behind all of the programming and the entertainment and the methods or the modalities of imparting the information on paper and magazines and pictures and images and sounds on screens and, you know, the totality of all the different ways that these things are woven together and presented as if they're fun or they're happy or they're something to be sought after. And it's really just their intention to direct us down a path, much like you know, if you could hold a piece of straw in front of a cow that was on its way to the slaughterhouse, you just hold it in front of its nose and keep holding it in front of its nose, and it keeps walking to the slaughterhouse. Well, isn't that what the propaganda and the various modalities of the media do? And they have to do that to compensate for all of the differences that are in all of us. So I'm agreeing with what you're saying, that yes, we are all absolutely different, and our oneness and our likeness is in that fact, that we are all different. And we are intended to be that way. We're individuals. Yet we should be able to function together in unison, much like the members of an orchestra would. So go ahead.
Well, I agree with that also, but I think that the way it was probably designed to be was that it's quite okay to have your own experience, which might be designated as your personal reality, but then, and that would be a subjective experience, by the way, and then also, when the need arises, there's another aspect to the entire experience which might be categorized as an objective reality. And in that objective reality, that's where there can be an interaction, a correspondence, a cooperation of some kind between yourself and other entities. And so it's like a dual system of interaction. You're allowed to have 100% internal world, which is going to be very different from the guy next to you, But for certain things, there's an external world, which for all intents and purposes equates to a very similar experience.
Mm-hmm.
And so what's interesting about that is that, you know, just let me divert for a minute from this main thought to elaborate on something. I'm reading a very exciting book right now that talks about spiritual technology of ancient civilizations, particularly Egypt. And it turns out that the laws that govern consciousness and the way in which human beings interact with their own brains, you might say, or reversing that statement, the way their brains interact with their own worldly perceptions were apparently very well understood in ancient times, much more so than they are by the general populace today. And some of the temples and stuff like that, various hieroglyphs, various monuments and things of that sort, were actually designed with this kind of knowledge in mind, so that when a person walked into a particular temple or a shrine or had exposure to some type of set of hieroglyphs, there was a transcending experience because the balance, the resonance, the composition, the arrangement of these various designs were presented as a holistic symbol to the right side of the brain. And the response is a feeling. So, rather than, like, if you correspond in the traditional manner with language, let's say, which is for the most part a left brain function, you get very specific facts. And those facts we relate to something that we're reading about or trying to communicate about, etc. But mm-hmm. with the ancient arrangement, the idea was to appeal to the other side of the brain where an emotional response was solicited. And that in turn turns out to be a completely different type of experience. Well, the interesting thing about that is, as we have discussed on other shows, if these Illuminati characters have information which they have been selectively keeping from the general public and passing down to their own kind from one generation to another, it stands to reason that they might, in fact, have access to some of this earlier understanding of consciousness. And they might actually be using that in the very way in which you described, you know, to produce the best brainwashing effects that they can muster. Because it's a well-known fact that any type of herd response is brought about by emotion and not logic.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, if you sit down and analyze some of the stuff that's going on in the media, in, you know, various programs, in the magazines that are produced, and all these other things, they might be designed in such a way as to solicit a non-logical, emotional response that would be predictable for the majority of people because of the fact that this knowledge was not only at hand, but properly applied.
Well, that's exactly why they use fear.
Sure.
You know, I didn't mean to cut you off. It sounded like you paused there, so.
Well, that's okay. I mean, you know, I don't have a set agenda that I'm trying to relate, but just some interesting facts that I've been mulling over in my mind lately, you know.
Mm-hmm. I'm in agreement with what you're saying. And they use fear, of course. They emotionalize fear. They emotionalize sympathy. They don't talk about empathy. And there is a difference, because when you sympathize, you give away your power. And I know you understand that in the fullest sense, being an engineer in power systems, and an inventor of power systems. But in this sense that, let's take a mass consciousness ploy that they use. They bring out information, and whether it's true or not, they advertise the hell out of it until everybody's talking about it, everybody's thinking about it, and then they ratchet up the fear of it, and then they create consequences for it. And let's use Al Gore's description and his book and his movie about global warming, which is the biggest farce running, or maybe it's a parallel to the swine flu, for example, or the changing economy, you know. I mean, it's all a bunch of nonsense and a bunch of lies. But they try to compartmentalize everybody, paint them into a corner, so that if you talk about it, okay, then what we're going to do, if you're not going to comply with this, then you're going to be fined. It's all about taking money away. It's all about taking your power away. Now, while you were describing this, this example popped into my mind, and I thought to myself, here's a cure for global warming. We know that when a person walks into a room, the room has a temperature. I'm sure you would agree. And let's just say that it's a constant 72 degrees. Now, a human being walks into that room. Is the temperature going to remain constant, 72 degrees, as long as there's a person in that room? There's a very strong chance that the temperature will rise. Now, let's say there's no air conditioning and no heat. It's just constructed that its temperature is stable at 72 degrees. Now, a person goes in there, and a person is giving off a certain number of BTUs a minute, or an hour, or a second, right? Would you agree? Okay. Now, you take 10 people in there, and that number is going to increase exponentially. In fact, it's impossible to predict exactly where the temperature will go, because every person gives off a different amount of heat. Now, imagine that because of what they're doing to us, what they're putting in our food, what they're spraying in our skies, what they're trying to inject in our bodies, what they're putting in our minds, how they're attacking our emotions, how they're bombarding us with electromagnetic radiation and microwaves and all kinds of technology. If they stopped doing that, we would not be so angry and not giving off so much heat. How much do you think the mean temperature of the Earth would drop, because people were no longer angry about the corruption government, the corruption in the banks, the corruption of the military-industrial complex, corruption of the international corporations? How much do you think it would drop? You'd have overnight the cure.
Well, you know, that's a really, really tough question, because the thermodynamics involved are beyond the capability of a human being to model. But the interesting thing is that we don't really have to worry about that too much, because if you just look at the predictions for this winter, I think global warming may have a very erroneous foundation, if you want to use that term, in view of the way nature doesn't seem to care about Al Gore's prediction.
Exactly. I know it's a farce, and I alluded to that in the beginning. You know, they have to repeat this mantra. But just that's another way of looking at the problem. You see what I'm saying?
Sure.
Is that there's no consideration as to the amount of BTUs that people give off. And believe me, politicians blow more hot air and smoke than anybody.
You don't have to convince me of that.
Okay, so I'm using an analogy to make an objective point. Okay, Now, we're talking about things that have subjective values, but you step outside the box, and the problem becomes a completely different issue. And why is it that they are the ones that make this determination? These are the types of questions we should be asking ourselves about everything that goes on in life. Why is it that there's someone else that has determined that they're going to make my decisions for me?
Because in reality, what they're really doing is making decisions that benefit them.
And of course.
It's part of the illusion for us to believe that they are doing the best for us. And
yeah.
That should be self-evident.
Yes, it is. And if they're so great at it and it's the best interest for us, why is it so screwed up? Why are they so incompetent at doing what they've created?
Well, you know, the honest answer to that is, I don't know if you've ever rubbed shoulders with any of these people, but they couldn't find their own backside in a well-lit room. You know, they're not that bright. If you take them out of the lie, cheat, steal, and murder syndrome, what the heck can they do? You realize that if our society collapsed, the first people who would starve to death would be the politicians.
Yeah, they would
can't
have
do
no
anything.
One. Yeah, they would have no one to leech off of.
And God forbid they would decide to do something, you know, on their own for themselves.
Yeah. Admittedly, this is very outside the box thinking, but. This this type of thinking and this type of conversation is discouraged. Why? Why is that a threat to their reality? If their reality is that all-powerful and indestructible and infinite in the way it was designed, why is it undergoing the problems that it has in and of itself? I mean, if we just stood by and watched, believe me, I don't do anything to affect the international economic system other than to talk about where I see corruption. And I know others that are quite expert at doing that. But I can observe it. I can remark and reflect on what I see. And none of it makes any sense. In fact, it in their own construct, in their own dealings with each other, and they're doing this with each other, they're not to be trusted amongst themselves. Leave us all out of the equation. They're robbing and stealing from each other and trying to blame it on us. Ultimately, that's what's being done, you see. They're assessing the burden of the responsibility on us as if it were our doing, our fault. And in a sense, that is correct when we do nothing. But as soon as we do something, that no longer holds any weight. They've got to come up with a different argument at that point, you see. And we really do have a responsibility to recognize that, and we're not doing that. We're expecting a piece of paper to make the decisions for us. And if we're not happy with the decisions that piece of paper makes, we're to complain to the piece of paper. But the piece of paper doesn't have eyes, and it doesn't have ears, and it doesn't have a heart. Doesn't have a mind.
It's interesting what you said a moment ago too. You know that if things don't go exactly the way they are intended, then they modify the program as rapidly as possible. Well, bouncing back to your earlier comments about global warming. It's interesting that, some of the storms and some of the weather patterns that we're having recently are so out of phase with the global warming predictions, that these sleazebags are already changing the buzzwords from global warming to, weather changing or weather patterns or, you know, other ambiguous terminology to try to, correct for the fact that global warming isn't happening the way they predicted. And you know what's interesting? I don't know why people don't pick up on that. You know, they should all be aware of the fact that, you know, when the buzzwords start to change, it happens for a reason.
Well, yeah, the buzzwords are created as focal points for everyone's consciousness. One word. You had 9/11, and the people that spoke out about 9/11 and the fraud that it was and the gross crime that it was and still is were called truthers, as if to call them that somehow invalidated what they were saying and validated what occurred, validated the lies, validated the deceitful, treacherous, traitorous acts perpetrated by the government and their minions, their international minions, and the obscene amounts of money that were made by these people. And we know that they did this. To deny it is just more of the same lies, you see. They cannot tell the truth. They cannot do what is right because that's not their purpose. And all we have to do is realize that and awaken to that fact. And we regain our power. You know, are we just a bunch of lemmings being run off, you know, into the sea or off a cliff? Because certainly people are acting that way.
Well, I don't know why, but there does seem to be a certain hesitancy in the larger groups of society to cling to a general opinion or a consensus of some sort, rather than to formulate an independent opinion. Maybe it's just the old story of taking the easier of two paths. I'm not sure. I'm not an expert on that, but I've certainly noticed it. And anybody who has the chutzpah to operate outside of that general consensus is considered an oddball for the most part. Even if he's admired by a few people here and there, generally speaking, they're considered odd. And that may just be an inherent human weakness that they have noticed over the eons and have capitalized on for their own sake. But I think it behooves humanity to become aware of the fact that this happens and it's being used against them, and it doesn't have to be that way.
Yeah, what you're describing, Jim, is the individuals or the masses individually hanging on to the false ego as the reality. You see, all these modalities that we talked about, we just touched upon them very generally. The media is the main one, and the entertainment venues, and whether it's sports or playing cards or a dog show or the horse races, or I mean, these are things that we can, you know, people appreciate those things for different reasons. I love horses. I can watch a horse race for just to watch the beauty of the animal running. I don't have to watch it because I'm betting money, you see. But all these things are geared towards money. They're geared toward gambling. They're geared toward the addictive vices that cause obsessive compulsive behavior. And so when a person is faced with recognizing the truth and they're programmed to be in denial because of all of these addictions or these obsessive compulsive behaviors, and that's reinforced through fear in the media, the news reports, and you know, we never hear the good things that are going on. We hear always this endless stream of all the bad things that are happening. Certainly, you and I are even talking about them, but we're talking about more so those that are steering us down that path, you see. So it comes back to us knowing who we really are and reclaiming our power. knowing individually who we are, why we are here. It wasn't an accident that we came here. Maybe somebody was told they were an accident. Sure, a lot of people were told by their parents, we didn't plan on having you. But they did, and that person came here as a spiritual being inhabiting a vessel, a physical body. We don't go deep enough into who we are. And that laziness and that apathy and that denial is cultivated into us. So, you know, it's got to be a thing where people wake up on their own. And once they do, they've got to take responsibility for themselves, but understand that once they can do that, they've gained their power, and then what they can do is limitless.
Well, that's all true, and I certainly agree with it as a general premise, but I'm beginning to wonder if there isn't some kind of a general flaw in humanity that these people are aware of and capitalize on. One thing that comes to mind, which I puzzled on quite deeply at the time, and maybe you remember this, Don, back in the, I guess it would be late 60s, early 70s, during that whole flower child movement that was working its way through the country, there was an outfit out in California that came into existence, and they were essentially a newspaper that published nothing but good news. As a matter of fact, that's what they were called, The Good News. And they lasted less than a year. Now, you know, what does that mean? I mean, it's like, of course, I don't know what kind of news they were actually transmitting, but if it was interesting stuff and worthwhile stuff, which I would like to assume for the benefit of the doubt, then it almost suggests that people prefer to hear bad news. And we have to ask ourselves, if that's true, why is that so?
Well,
Do you remember that?
Absolutely. You're probably talking about, this is something that began around 1967, 68, 69. It was pretty much in the full swing. You had Woodstock happening. And through the 70s. Yeah, it was this flower child thing for the women, get rid of your bras, you know, declare independence. And, of course, this is all social programming, Tavistock stuff, you know, mass mind control. And through conditioning and the emotion, how's a woman supposed to feel, you know, taking off her bra? And it was at the same time this was implied subconsciously that we're throwing out all morals, societal morals are being thrown out the window, and it's a free for all. And then you had the riots that occurred. I remember I think it was in 1966 in Watts. They were burning down the Watts district of Los Angeles. Over civil rights. These things were pushed upon the people. And they used a series of events and assassinations and that to fuel the fires of racial hatred, divide and conquer. You know, I didn't need to experience that, and I'm sure you didn't, to get along with my black friends. We got along already. Or my Mexican friends or my Puerto Rican friends. Or any other nationality. I didn't have those problems. Those things were constructed for us and put out there as if they were our problems. And that was all with intent to promote wars. They're doing the same thing today with the Muslim community. And they're truly making people angry, too, because you go over the limit behind the operatives that you create, the actors that play these roles that you've scripted out so carefully over decades or even hundreds of years. I mean, this stuff's been going on for thousands of years. And it's written up in the books as this was the reason this war started, and this is why this happened, and these were the victors, and now we have peace. And they turn around a couple of months later, and they're doing the same thing again because they can't stand not raking in the money, you see. They have to build bigger bulldozers to scoop up the money and bigger steam shovels to scoop it up and bigger dump trucks to scoop it up into and dig deeper bases to hide it in. But it's them doing all this, you see. People are trying to live. People are here. They begin life with the intent of carrying out a purpose. And they find out over time that it's been constructed a little bit differently than what they thought when they came here. But that's part of the challenge, too. And we're in a time now where we have to recognize that responsibility and awaken to that responsibility and start acting accordingly. There are many doing it, and those people are not being criticized. Actually, no one is being criticized. I'm just making observations, as I know you are.
It's definitely time for change.
Yeah.
I mean, if we don't take the bull by the horns now, as a race,
species,
an expression of life on this planet,
yeah,
then these subhumans are going to wind up, you know, in a very entrenched position from which it'll be almost impossible to extricate ourselves.
What are your thoughts on I know this personally, but I'd like you to share this with the audience. In the context of us, we're thinking about ourselves, you know, the individual tends to think, what will happen if I don't have this? And they go into a fear mode. Or what will happen if I can't do this? Or I'm unable to have this? We tend to think and act upon the programming. And yet, for one to extricate themselves, they have to come to an awareness of how this affects the universe and how the universe is affecting them. It's not just what is here at the moment. It's not just what is in, you know, inside of your body or inside of your reality and or their reality. There's a much grander reality, and we have to recognize nature. Nature doesn't have this identity crisis that people have, the human species.
Well, I think part of the problem, Don, is because of the fear of survival and the way in which things are structured. Take a mortgage payment, for instance. I mean, you don't have to be overly bright to understand how that works. If you don't make the payment every month, your house is taken away from you, and you have to go look for a nice cardboard box to live in. And, you know, so that represents an overhanging form of fear that is tied into your survival. And as a result of even knowing this, people keep their nose to the grindstone and they don't challenge the system. And yet, I mean, we've had whole shows on this subject. The whole thing is crooked from the get-go, you know. But that doesn't seem to matter simply because of the fact that the way the system handles problems is that they single out the rebellious or incapable individual and eliminate him. But what we don't seem to realize is that if we acted in unison, what are they going to do about it? To take an example, supposing 350 million Americans said, screw you, we're not paying our mortgage anymore. What are they going to do? You know, that's the way all this works. It's the same old story that a guy with a six-shooter can hold off a crowd of 1,000 people simply because of the fact no one wants to be shot first. They all know that there's only six bullets, but that's beside the point. And, you know, this type of thing has been implemented in a very, very successful manner. And I think the interesting thing is, and I've done experiments along these lines myself when the situation arose, that instead of worrying about these ramifications on a personal level to the point where you're terrorized, everybody should undertake to duplicate these little experiments where you you trust your situation to the universe. I can tell you personally, I have often been in a position in the last 45 years or so where I had no job, had no income, had no place to go, simply because of making what you might call imprudent decisions. And instead of panicking, I just trusted to the universe. I said, well, I don't know exactly what to do now, but I believe that something will happen to vindicate me from this predicament. And I'm telling you, as God is my witness, every single time, it always worked out. And I might add, it worked out in a way that I would never have been able to predict. And if we realize that we have this power and we have this connection to the divine or the infinite or the cosmos, whatever you choose to call it, and we actually use it, you see, there's the thing. You have to be willing to try it out. There's no way that listening to my voice or reading about it in some self-improvement book or some spiritual literature is ever going to convince you of the reality of this stuff. You have to actually try it and make it part of your life. If you don't do that, you'll never understand that it's the operation of a much bigger cycle than what you're conscious of. But as soon as you do that, suddenly there's this huge expansion in your awareness, and there's a new form of trust and a new form of freedom and independence. I'm not saying that all your earthly problems are going to evaporate, but what I am saying is that once you get used to doing this, you will realize that you're not the prisoner that they want you to think you are. There are always alternatives, and the universe will work with you once you identify yourself as a willing participant in the larger picture.
Yes, that's profound, and that's true. That's kind of what I was saying about the impact or the role that the rest of the universe is undergoing, because when we don't act, we affect the universe, and the universe reciprocates on that basis. When we do act, and we act in a responsible manner, and that's with intent and a certain amount of morality, a certain amount of consideration about the impact that our actions have on others. That in and of itself is enough to raise the vibration to shift this whole paradigm. It could be done. You know, it's like 10 people being awake. If they talk to 10 people they know and they can awaken those 10 people, it would take 8 days to awaken the whole planet. That's it. 8 days. It's yep. It's that easy. But it requires that process to continue.
And it does require a certain surrender to a higher force and a great deal of trust. And, you know, this is what's interesting about this, Don. You know, the more recognized religions, and I'm not condemning any of them, but they basically have reduced their participation to preaching and various formulas and things of that sort, all of which are good. But in reality, for all of this to work, you have to bypass the dogma of any religion and strike up a independent relationship between you and the deity. And you actually have to surrender yourself to that deity in the sense that you say something to the effect, that you are willing, you know, for the sake of goodness on the planet and for the sake of improving the world, you know, to be an instrument, to be a tool, to be an expression of the universe for good on this planet. And you can't just say it. You have to really live it. But if you do that, you'll start to notice these things, without any doubt. And that doesn't mean shirking your responsibilities or, you know, becoming a rebel or anything of that sort. You can continue to live the life that you're living, but it'll take on a completely different dimension if you do this with sincerity. And it's one of those things, you just can't explain it. Someone just has to try it.
Well, you see, everything gets labeled. A person that liberates themselves through consciousness becomes a different person in knowing who they are. They tap into their higher powers, and they actually raise their vibration. And by raising their vibration, they raise the vibration of those around them, those with whom they come into contact. And believe me, it goes far beyond this realm. You know, we had this recent internet disclosure that we were going to have a major announcement coming from the President of the United States about an alien presence. Now, why would that rumor be put out? Why does it need to come out in the form of an email rumor when we talk about that almost every night on this show? You know, and there are many other shows that people talk about this. Why does it have to be presented? You see, these are all things to give people false hope or to divert the attention away from what's really going on. And it doesn't matter. Do you need someone else to tell you that, to know that that's a reality for many people? Doesn't have to be your reality, but can you not consider it? You know, it was like the topic of abductions. When I first heard about abductions, I asked myself the question, you know, why am I not being abducted? Not that I wanted to be abducted. It's why are certain people abducted and other people aren't? Well, there are a lot of reasons for that, and I suppose I could better serve my time just spending it on things that I'm interested in, you know, things that can produce a positive impact. And certainly I've talked about the issue. People become victimized, and they want to feel victimized, and there lies the fear, or they expect to feel victimized because they've been programmed that they're victims. So, you know, the point I'm making here is we have all these different realities that are morphing in and out of each other, and they're very different from what you're describing when a person finds themselves, when they discover themselves and they become conscious, and they make a decision to become responsible and to stay responsible. They change the vibration and they change the reality from within, and that affects everything outside. They're waiting for someone to rescue them. Now, they're putting trust in someone they don't even know. Certainly, because if they knew themselves, they would know that they don't even need that other person or that other being to come and help them. They have the capacity within themselves. And we're out of time here, Jim, but I want to give you the opportunity to make a closing statement.
Well, I don't know exactly what to say because it's such a broad topic, you know, that it's actually difficult to close without saying millions of things. But I would like to at least reiterate one thing, and that is that people need to be aware of the difference between the objective and subjective realities and contemplate on how those differentials are actually used, you know, to herd us in various directions. And it's not so difficult to do that. You know, you just have to take time to think about certain things. like, for instance, if Dawn is looking at a red color blotch and I'm looking at a red color blotch, we may both agree that we see red, but neither one of us can ever prove that Dawn's red is the same as my red. And so therein lies one of the greatest mysteries that we have, the capability of agreeing upon an external stimulus for the sake of commonality, but never really knowing what the difference is between our subjective interpretations of those realities. And, these are mysteries which have perplexed mankind for eons, literally. And yet, for some reason, our generation, or our immediate civilization, doesn't seem to pay much attention to that. Maybe it's because we're, already entrenched with programming that keeps our nose to the grindstone. But you start thinking about these basic elements of reality and how they can be used against you, and it will really open your eyes.
Yes, well said. Well, Jim, unfortunately, we're out of time, but I want to thank you for being on Evident Footprints, and thanks for your wisdom, and certainly we can pick up this conversation on a future show.
Happy to do that, though.
Okay. You have a great weekend, and I look forward to your appearance next week on Evident Footprints.
Thank you so much.
Folks, you have been listening to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. And we would also like to thank Wind Talkers Radio Network and blogtalkradio.com for tuning in. Special thanks to Don and Doug Newsom and bbsradio.com, Seth Hendrick on the sound tonight. And we'd like to thank you, the listening audience, for tuning in. Join us again next week. My special guest on Monday will be Dr. A. True Ott. In the meantime, I wish you all a great weekend and a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.